The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
And, folks, that disclaimer was never more important than it is during this show, as we all know. Aloha and welcome. My name is Maka'ala, and this is Makai Watch, and it's a program about the aina, those things that feed us is the real definition of aina. And we provide information and opportunities for community involvement in the stewardship of our resources on Kauai. Makai means toward the ocean, as all things flow to the sea, and the sea is connected to you and me. Today's show is unusual. It's a tough one. It's a tough subject. It's a difficult conversation to have because it has information in it that is, I hope, in a way, triggering, or at least it will certainly be of interest to those of you who care about this place and about this land and about each other. Today we're actually going to talk about anthrax. And anthrax as it exists on the North Shore. It's an interesting story and has an interesting history. And we have an interesting person to help us wend our way through the subject matter. Lori Mull lives in Princeville. She lives in the area adjacent to a part of the course that has been proposed by the landowner for development. When you develop something in Hawaii and it calls for an environmental assessment, you must complete what is called a Kapa'akai analysis. Kapa'akai is named after the group who's headed by a girlfriend of mine on the Big Island, who demanded legally that a cultural assessment be included. In fact, a precursor to the EA, to the environmental assessment. In the old days, we did what was called a cultural impact assessment, a CIA. And I think we just all got tired of calling it CIA. But at any rate, it's now called a kapa'akai. Pa'akai is the word for salt. So it's a very treasured element, right, in our culture, in our world, all over the world. And the kapa'akai analysis that was required for the development revealed that anthrax existed at some time in history on the property being proposed to be developed. For many, that was a shock. For many, that was brand new information. I think you all know that Princeville was a ranch, was a cattle ranch. And Lori Mull just happens to be a really good attorney and a very interested citizen and a long-term resident of Kauai and just happens to live there. So, Lori, are you with us?
I am. Aloha Maka'ala, and thank you so much for having me.
Of course, of course. Lori's calling in today and not sitting here with me because she's had planned travel and she's on that travel, and I really want to get this story going. It's had some attention in Civil Beat. It's had some attention in some local media, and it certainly had some attention in the community. So I thought it was best if we go ahead and get this ball rolling, get this story told. So, Lori, when you first found out that there was anthrax, an anthrax incident in the land adjacent to you, how long ago was that?
Oh, interesting. That was, interestingly, I found it out from Starwood Capital Group's Kapa'akai study, which you just mentioned, back in, I believe it was probably July of 2021, maybe August, when I first saw their document.
Yeah, and up until that, you didn't know anything about it being there, right?
No, I did not.
Yeah, and you have a you know, Princeville is really interesting to me in many ways. There's like these little enclaves of communities, you know, little neighborhoods within Princeville. And you have a rather nice but kind of tight little community there, right? Where the street where you live, and you know your neighbors and da-da-da. And this wasn't in anybody's deeds or property documents, right?
Correct. There was nothing in my closing documents. I used to live over on Emilani, and then I moved over to Sunset Circle about, I've forgotten how long ago, but I, in both closing documents, which being the paper hoarder I am, I went back and looked through them. There was no reference to it, to this whatsoever. It was news to me.
And we don't know whether that's because the people that were handling the transactions didn't know, or whether they did know and they didn't want you to know. We have no way to know. But
well, I've actually kind of done a little polling of everybody I know in Princeville. Had them cool. Go back and look at their documents. And the only thing I have found was way back in the early days when some of the residents that bought early on in the early 1970s, when the offering of the land was made public, there was something that circulated, but regarding the fact that there was anthrax on what is now the Woods Nine. And I just found out from a couple of people that are longtime residents over on Emilani that was in part of their paperwork. But I don't think there's been anything since like the early 70s that's been in anybody's closing documents.
Interesting. They would even put it in there then, yeah?
Yeah, it was part of a public offering. I'm not sure that it was in their closing documents per se, but it was part of the first public offering of property.
Well, that's actually a good thing. Thank you for whoever decided to do that. That was a good thing. Some of this stuff tends to be era oriented, yeah, the times. Depends on the times you were living in. So when you saw the Kapa'akai paperwork as part of the proposal to develop this land, it was a proposal to specifically develop Woods Hole Number 9, right?
Well, all of the Woods 9.
Yeah.
It started off on Woods 1 through 3 with a proposed glamping concept that Starwood initiated back in August of 2020. There was a bit of a hue and cry about that, and the county actually stepped in and said, no, this is basically a hotel, and this is not land zoned for a hotel, so no, you cannot have overnight accommodations in a situation like this, especially one that is surrounded on all four sides by residential homes.
Yeah, and Lori started calling me back then saying, you know, won't you get involved in this? And frankly, for the glamping, it just wasn't in my wheelhouse particularly. And then she called and said, now they're proposing to develop something bigger. And of course, it's going to involve digging. And that means it's going to get down into the dirt. And we all know that the ground in most of the area, most of the area on Kauai, but certainly most of the area in the North Shore, is a bit like capillaries. You know, there's groundwater that runs everywhere. And we seldom know where it is, right? It's just sort of everywhere. And I started asking myself, if the anthrax is still viable and if the water's running through it, what kind of an environmental or public health concern is that? So then I did get involved, and since that time, we've had a good run so far. We've had a good path of trying to get people interested. It doesn't seem to be slowing Starwood down at all. But so why don't you just take me through a little bit of the path, maybe even some before you and I met. Of what you did once you found out that the anthrax was there and that that was exactly where the development was proposed to be?
Well, I was a history major in college, so when I first saw the reference to the anthrax outbreak in 1917, I went back to my roots and started researching old territorial records. And back in 1917, in March, mid-March, cattle started dying on the Princeville Ranch. They thought it was due to a nasty wet spring, and they thought it might have been weather-related. So they moved the herd down to what they call the lower paddocks, lower elevations of the ranch, which is down, actually the woods course is part of the lowest elevations in Princeville. The cattle were dying, the first cattle that went down were left in the field where they laid. They skinned the carcasses and salted the hides and drug them through the field because they were slated for the hide industry, which was fairly robust back in 1917. They didn't think that much about it, and then the pack animals that were dragging the hides started coming down with it. The horses and the mules started getting sick. So then the concern level was raised, and they brought in a veterinarian, the territorial veterinarian, who originally diagnosed the situation as hemorrhagic septicemia, which is kind of an end stage of anthrax, but it wasn't diagnosed as anthrax for quite, oh gosh, I've forgotten how long, several, maybe 2 to 3 weeks. The cattle were dying at the rate of about 10 a day, and back then it was extremely difficult to bury 10 cattle a day. The ranch, the herd on the Princeville Ranch was primarily Herefords. Bulls weighed about 1,800 pounds, and the heifers 15 to 1,600 pounds. Imagine having to hand shovel 10 cattle graves per day in a very wet spring in Kauai. It was a mess. The protocol was to bury the carcasses, but the cattle were dying so fast there was not enough wood or fuel to burn them. There was, I think that coal was even mentioned, and there was a coal shortage that year. So they really had no option other than to bury them. More protocol from back in the day was to lime the areas. Once they diagnosed it was anthrax, they had to take extra precautions. So they limed each animal that had died of anthrax and then thoroughly limed the area around it and any topsoil that was put on top of it. Well, fast forward to the early 21st century, and the Canadian veterinarians discovered that lime actually aids in sporulation and the robust activity of spores, anthrax spores. So we have burials that are probably in the 4-foot range and that were thoroughly limed, which probably aided in the longevity of the spores. It gives me great concern because anthrax spores are known to last for centuries. They found viable spores in Kruger National Park in Africa that are over 250 years old. So this is not something that I took lightly.
No, 250 years. We're not there yet. We're not there yet. So the idea is, yeah, I mean, even after the 2018 flood in Hanalei, we were advised by the Department of Health to lime the grassy play areas of the nursery schools because of the potential for wastewater systems overflow.
Right.
So lime was then, you know, a good idea, and today the best we could think of to do in that circumstance as well. So it's not like that was archaic. It's just that the connection was not understood between lime and anthrax being helped by the lime, which was not the intention at all. Wow.
Oh, not at all. But then on top of that, when the Princeville was developed in the early 70s, this portion of the golf course, lime is routinely used in making grass green on golf courses. So it had another 50 years of lime that has been routinely used on the topsoil. So
just to make it more interesting. Wow.
Just to make it more interesting, yeah.
Wow. Okay, so now you know, you and some folks know that anthrax is there, that the story is legit, and that it's very near you, and that it's on this, yes, and that it's on this site. And I got involved thinking about what was happening with the groundwater, and I was off on that track. And one of the things you did was to meet with the Department of Health and say, excuse us, this is a thing, and it's right here, and you know, what do we do, and are you concerned? And Department of Health locally is a pretty limited service. It's a small office, and they do a little bit of water quality stuff, and they do some general health kinds of things, but it's not a big institution. So they sent it up high. They sent it to their specialists. What were they called? That they sent it to the other department.
It's the Department of Health in Honolulu, the branch of their environmental branch, and the Hazard Evaluation and Emergency Response Team.
Which seemed appropriate, right? That seemed like a good move.
exactly. And back in the 1979, when PV2 was being looked at for development, an EIS study was done, and the Department of Health had stated that the areas that were marked by silver oak trees, which the territorial records indicate marked anthrax grave burial sites, were to be avoided. Absolutely no ground disturbing activities whatsoever were to be done on that. And in 1980, the LUC cited that in their approval of the development of Princeville 2. I'm going to go backwards for just a minute to the original development of PV1, because Curly Carswell, a well-known engineer and rancher on the North Shore, the genesis behind the Honolulu Stampede, for anybody who's listening from back in the day, he was married to Gail Wilcox, and the Wilcox family actually owned the ranch during the 1917 outbreak. So he had familial historical knowledge of it and knew all about what the silver oak trees meant. There were also some rock piles on the woods course that were significant as showing burial site locations. I think they were primarily used as boundary markers. There are 33 silver oak trees in Princeville, and 32 of them are on the woods course.
There's 33 left.
33 left, correct.
Yeah. So I will say that I was friends with Aming Fu, who was one of the, if not the last manager of the ranch. Mm-hmm. And as is the way in Hanalei, it was a Friday night drinking buddy. And he had lots of stories. But I never had a story from him that didn't turn out to be credible. He wouldn't let me write anything down. We'd be sitting in the park at a bench, picnic table, and he'd start telling these stories, and I'd run to my car and get a pencil and piece of paper, and as soon as I came back with that, he'd shut up and wouldn't talk anymore. So it was just, it was a thing with him. But he told stories about the anthrax, and I was friends with Curly Carswell, and I went to Curly and said, you know, Aming's telling me these stories, you know, is this Friday night drinking, or is this, you know? And he said, oh, no, that's all true. And so my point in telling you that is that it wasn't completely unknown. There was a bunch of people that did know that the anthrax was there, but we knew that it was in a place that had been sequestered, that had been preserved, that had been set aside, that had been designated as a no disturb, no dig, no touch, certainly no develop.
You are 100% correct. I interviewed Curly before he passed away. In fact, I have a great videotape of him in a conversation with Robert Trent Jones Jr., who goes by Bobby. They were great friends from back in the day. And they were actually walking and riding horseback all across the lands that were slated for development of PV1. And as Bobby tells us, well, as Bobby and Curly both tell the story, Bobby said, well, what are these trees over here? I'm not sure those go with my landscape design. He said, you don't touch those trees, and we don't dig in this area. This was an anthrax burial ground, and the only way you can create your golf hazards and obstacles are by adding topsoil. They allowed absolutely no digging on the Woods Nine. And if you look at the Woods Nine, it has a totally different topography than the oceans and the lakes course. And to this day, Bobby is adamant that it was done to keep a blanket over any potential anthrax spores that might be in the ground. And back then, they really didn't know how long anthrax spores can live. And that is scientific truth now, that these spores are very robust and can live for a very, very long time.
And you've been able to find out a lot about anthrax, more than I certainly ever knew, more than anybody would be expected to know. We do know that it survives in water as well.
That's correct. Up to 20 years in ponding freshwater and up to 2 years in salt water. There is a stream that runs the entire length of this 9-hole golf course that goes down into the old fish pond, which you pronounce way better than I do.
Kamaumaikai.
Thank you very much. And then, which also drains into the bay. So there is no way that you can separate microbiological systems. What's in the soil winds up in the water. We are a very small island, and microbiology does just happen in one system versus another. It is all interconnected.
Right, and that's where my interest lies, that, you know, okay, where are those little spores going now? We've not had, as far as I know, I guess I should phrase this in a question, we've not had what you and I might call an outbreak of anthrax. We've not had any health emergencies. We've not had what we might describe as anthrax symptoms or exposure or diagnoses since then, though, right? Or have we?
No, that's correct. There were two people infected in the outbreak lasted from 1917 to 1919. The territorial vet contracted anthrax, and there was also a dairy worker on Maui. The origin of this is still rather mysterious. It popped up on Kauai. It was raging, and then it popped up on in a dairy herd on Oahu, and then a little bit later on Maui. By the time it started popping up on Maui and Oahu, they knew what it was. The vaccine was available, and they burned all the cattle. There was that one fellow that worked with the Maui herd also got anthrax. Both survived, but anthrax is a nasty disease. It is really, really, it's not something anybody ever wants. There are three ways you can contract it: cutaneous, through your skin, gastrointestinal, from eating contaminated meat or drinking contaminated water, and inhalation anthrax, which thankfully is the rarest form of anthrax, but it's also the deadliest. So I think there's a serious risk involved in the potential development of this land. It is not for anything that even mildly resembles affordable housing. It's going to be a high-end version of the hotel. The one hotel is what I understand they're anticipating. And this is all driven by corporate profits, not public safety, which I find problematic at best.
to say the very least. But it's not just that. I mean, if they're going to have to dig. You don't build, as my father used to say, you don't build a skyscraper without going down in the ground. You know, you go down to give it some feet, right? So you don't build up unless you build down, and you want a strong foundation. So they're going to, you know, the proposal would be not just disturb the land, but really disturb it, you know, dig it big time and make a big footing, yeah, for any
exactly.
kind of a
building. Exactly. Well, they're talking about multi-storied townhomes, I guess some with adjacent walls, but 3 to 4 stories requires you to go down at least 20 feet to get a foundation that is robust enough for a building that large.
Well, I'm not a great grave digger, but I know that I couldn't dig in wet dirt to bury an 1,800-pound animal 20 feet. I mean, I think that's why we have 6-foot burials in cemeteries, right? That's about as far as a couple of men can dig.
Exactly.
Wow.
And I can't imagine these poor ranch hands in a wet, windy, rainy spring, hand shoveling to try and bury 10 cows per day. And that went on for months and months and months.
Jeez.
They finally started getting control of it. It took 2 rounds of vaccinations to get it under control. And the 10 per day deaths started subsiding probably mid-August.
Wow. I can't. I sympathy is too light a term for the whole idea. I think if it were to happen today, of course there would be machinery involved, and there would be you know, all kinds of what we now call PPE, protective equipment and devices to protect oneself, and all kinds of health preventative measures, and all kinds of inspectors standing around saying, you know, okay, you have to do it this way, and you can't do it that way, and don't fling the dirt in the air, and, you know, all that stuff, none of which happened.
That is totally correct. In fact, anthrax is considered, it's a level 3 bioterrorism weapon, but we're not talking about, you know, weaponized anthrax here. However, the EPA categorizes a known anthrax graveyard as a level 2 biocontaminated site, which requires full PPE. And in a perfect world, they'd be able to tent off portion any place that they were even doing testing. But yeah, I don't know how they can possibly do that over 90 acres. And it's also another problem with respect to this is that testing for anthrax in soil is very, very difficult because soil, by its inherent nature, has so many other contaminants in it. So it's hard to find. They've even done some anthrax testing on sites they knew to be positive and gotten negative results. So negative results does not mean absence of anthrax. It's very tricky to even test for it in soil, and it's almost impossible to eradicate it in soil.
Once they find it, if they find it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the whole thing is very, very tricky and legally problematic, because if they dig for it and drill for it and don't find it, then the powers that be are likely to say, well, you know, report says not there, go ahead, you know. I'm not sure. I'm also very cognizant of our current times and federal mm-hmm. oversight. And thinking, I don't know who the watchdogs would be. I don't know who the, you know, given the current circumstances, given the circumstances before now, but given the circumstances now, I can't help but think, if somebody tells you that there's anthrax there, you ought not to dig it up. Just saying. I mean,
Just saying.
I'm thinking, if you don't have, you have a memory of, in the news we've seen where people have sent them envelopes, and in the envelope they were afraid that it was anthrax, and it's evacuated the town and evacuated mm-hmm. the building, and everybody's freaking out, and, you know, doctors and lawyers are lining up, and, you know, that whole thing, and here it sits in this dirt. It's pretty freaky. I want to take a little bit of a break, let you catch your breath, get a drink of water and whatever.
Okay.
And I didn't warn Annie ahead of time, but Annie being Annie, She said, well, I said, we need music to play. She said, what do you want to hear? I said, I don't know. And she said, well, there's a rock band called Anthrax.
Which we're not going to hear because oh. It's not quite the audience that we're going for. I thought, you know, could be something.
Well, I think it's good. Yeah, it's good for Lori and me to know that that even exists. We should.
Look it up later.
Yeah,
look it up later.
Yes, it certainly yeah. will. We good. Certainly.
So actually, when I first started researching this, that band came up a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, funny.
Yeah, that's
funny.
Sort of my misspent youth with hair metal. As you're listening to Kauai Community Radio, we're at KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Makai Watch, and you're listening to a conversation with Lori Mull and Maka'ala, and they're talking about the anthrax issue in Princeville. Let's take a little break.
This is Makai Watch, and today we're talking with Lori Mull about, anthrax. Anthrax not in some place far away that we can't even be concerned about, but anthrax right here. I always want to end with River City when I say that. Right here. Right here on Kauai, and in fact, right here on the North Shore. And, you know, potentially other places that we just don't know about. There's always that. But the point of this story is that they did the best they could when they discovered that's what it was. They did the best they could. They killed the animals. They buried the animals. They did what they thought was right, which was liming the animals. And they certainly did the best they could to protect the place from causing any problems or disease in the future by covering it over and planting marker trees and saying, do not develop there. Now, I do remember when Princeville was developed that area was called the Greenbelt, that it was sold, it was promoted as, you know, this is a pretty part, you know, this is never going to be anything. It's just going to be pretty and green. And I know that there are people in Princeville who are feeling bait and switch on that aspect. However, come the anthrax issue, until we have better information, until we have a surety that there's no problems there, then, you know, the best course of action is to, above all, do no harm. You know, don't dig a hole there. I wanted to let Lori, you know, get the story out, and we've essentially done that before I invited you to call if you'd like. The area code is 808. The number is 826-7771 if you would like to be part of the conversation. We certainly would welcome that. It's not a time for attacking anybody. Everybody's doing the best they can here. The situation has changed because the landowner now wants to develop the parcel. So
that is correct. Well, if I didn't mean to interrupt,
no.
But part of the original promise of the initial developer of Princeville, Eagle County Development Corporation, to the LUC, the Hawaii State Land Use Commission, was that they would keep half of Princeville in open space because they wanted to preserve the rural character of the North Shore. They went to great lengths to assure both the LUC and the county that this would never be another Waikiki, that this was intended to have a rough equivalency of open space to developed space. And that is exactly where PV1 is right now. It was a master plan. They did a great job of infrastructure, drainage. It works really well. And there has not been a single outbreak of anthrax anywhere in Hawaii since the last horse died in 1919 on the Prince Hill Ranch. They contained it. And it was so well contained that the ranchers here and the people who raise horses and sheep don't even vaccinate for anthrax anymore because it's like rabies. It's not necessary anymore. So they have done a really good job of eradicating the problem right now until soil disturbances might occur. And in addition to the public health concern for humans, it is so easy to move anthrax spores around on the bottom of your shoes, on heavy equipment, tools, gloves, anything that is in a contaminated field. It will go to the next place. It's stealthy. You can't see it. You can't smell it. You can't taste it. It's an invisible invader that is easily transported, which to me, I think, should raise alarm bells across the entire 808 area code. I was in line at TSA, and there were three guys that had just come off a construction zone, and they still had on their jackets and all that, and they were muddy, and they had their tool kits. They put them on the conveyor belt to go through TSA, took off their shoes, put them through the belt as well, and then got on a plane to Honolulu. I know they got off in Honolulu because I was right behind them getting off the plane as well. And I thought, oh, wow. I had that OMG moment of how this could so easily, we're such a global population right now, it could go so easily from one island to the next, from the North Shore to the South Shore to the West Shore to the East Side. So that is not, it's agriculturally a problem, and it's a public health concern, in my humble opinion.
Yeah. So what are the next steps? And I know that trying to stop the development certainly, you know, will be one, at least until everyone is satisfied that they know, have identified and fully understand what's there and what remains a threat. This is a legal process at this point, and I know that there's a lot of constraints on what you can talk about, and that's as it should be. I do understand that. But the next steps that I think have happened is that the landowner has taken some actions to try and find out if there's still anthrax there, and we don't know the results of that I don't want to say research, but of that investigation.
Well, it was digging, which yeah. I found highly offensive because there was no... We were not necessarily opposed to them testing it. We were just opposed to them not testing it properly, not storing it properly, not transporting it properly, any soil samples that they took. That wasn't the case. The guys that were out there on the woods course taking soil samples didn't even have on masks. They had no eye coverings. They were in T-shirts and long pants, but I went out and took masks to some of them and said, you know, this is an anthrax graveyard. And the response was, what? They said, and the supervisor rather quickly escorted me off the site, but they were unaware of what was in the ground. So I find that very disturbing. There was a second team that came behind them that also had on no PPE. There was no county or state or federal oversight whatsoever, which I think is disturbing. And we have no way of knowing what has been done, how it was done, whether it was properly handled, stored, transported. It was all done by Starwood's experts who charged a very pretty penny for it. So I'm concerned about that. They did break a piece of equipment, and as they were in one of the spots where they were digging, and they got about 3.5 feet down, I think, trying to dig out the auger that broke. I guess it was an auger. And they found cattle bones and a tooth. So it didn't take much for them to come across the carcass.
So we know they're there.
Oh, yeah. They're probably 450-ish.
It's a lot of bones.
That's a lot of beef. That's a lot of tonnage of cattle. If you look at each cow weighing a little less than a ton and multiply that by being conservative, 400, I think it's closer to 450, that is a whole lot of contaminated carcass.
Yeah.
And it's a messy disease. When an animal dies from this, it's messy. they bodily fluids and blood oozes out of every opening and leaches into the soil. And I think it's something like, oh, I've forgotten how many millions of spores per milliliter of bodily fluid.
Unbelievable.
From an anthrax carcass. And I can't even come close to doing the math on that.
Yeah, but it's clear. I mean, the picture is a good one that you paint. That's a very helpful picture. The image is, you know, you don't want to be disturbing this stuff. You know, it's not a... And this is 1919, folks. This is not, you know... This is back then.
Yeah.
And although they did understand what anthrax was.
Louis Pasteur first identified the bacteria, and luckily, it was about 6 months before the Princeville outbreak in 1917, they developed the vaccine. So initially, when it was diagnosed as hemorrhagic septicemia, they had ordered vaccine from the mainland for that, but, you know, everything came in by boat, and it wasn't quick. It wasn't, there was no FedEx back then. And then they realized that it was the wrong diagnosis. So they had to try again to get the vaccine, which they finally did get, but cattle were still dying. So they had to continue to vaccinate a second time before the death started to subside. And they still continued for literally until 1919, but at much, much lesser numbers than at the height of the outbreak.
So between the time that that the current owner, Starwood, has done the digging and the investigation, and as we sit here today, there's sort of a dearth of information right now as to what what's happened. Where are these samples that they dug up? When I called, I was told the Department of Agriculture had stopped them from leaving the state, but there's no lab here.
Right. It has to go to a level 3 bio lab. it's my understanding from the Department of Health that the Department of Agriculture released them the soil samples sometime in January. I don't know the date.
Oh, okay, good.
I just found that out. Yeah, they were destined for a lab in Florida that has the same name as Starwood's experts, so...
Oh, that's interesting.
I thought you'd think so.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, so what we know for sure, well, sort of for sure, is that they're in a lab in Florida.
I believe so. Okay, so I assume they were received.
Yeah, so the next, right, you are a lawyer. So the next step will be finding out what those reports, if there are reports, if there was an analysis, and if those what those reports say. And I know you're and what you formed as an SOS HUI will be seeking those reports or seeking that information. That'll be important, certainly important to know.
Absolutely, but I think any results have to be taken with a grain of salt because of the inefficiency of testing in soil and the fact that they've just tested, but they tested maybe 1% of the 90 acres. So I'm not sure that that's a sampling that would be applicable to the entirety of what they are looking at developing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it shouldn't give anybody any comfort if you're,
It won't give me comfort, I can tell you that.
No. So what would give you comfort? What do you want to see as a result of having discovered this really frightening information about a place in literally in your backyard? What do you want to see happen? What would be the ultimate, I mean, besides just leave everything alone. Nobody was dying last week. Leave everything alone and leave it where it is and forget your plan. Likelihood of that, of them doing that is you know, not high.
Right. I really think that this is a situation where this land needs to remain undisturbed. There's an outbreak of anthrax in Wyoming right now, and another one in Texas. It it's really nothing to take lightly. And to develop something that is not necessary to develop, I find to be just shy of unconscionable and reckless. The risk is just too high for so many different reasons. In my perfect world, Starwood, who markets itself as an environmentally sensitive organization, would put the wood knife into conservation.
Yeah.
I mean, that to me would make the most sense.
Yeah. But it looks as though the fight is on, because they have spent a little bit of money doing the investigation, and they have sent it to a lab and da-da-da-da-da. So I mean, they could have an epiphany, right? And say, oops.
I suppose.
That was a bad idea.
A broken dream.
That was a bad idea. Next steps legally, there's a hearing in June?
It's not a hearing, it's a trial.
Okay.
We have a trial date in June in Lihue. And we are moving forward with we're not seeking monetary damages. All we're asking the court to do is to keep this ill-advised development from going forward under these circumstances.
To just stop the building.
It's basically an injunction.
So it's an injunction to stop the building.
Correct.
And this is before
we're not seeking any damages or anything like that. We just want them to let it be.
And this is before Judge Watanabe.
That's correct.
So I will do my level best on this program to let folks know when that is going to occur, so that the judge has a sense of community interest.
That would be great. May I add another little
story? Sure, of course.
Backstory?
Absolutely.
Back in October, we were concerned about raising anxiety on the North Shore about this, but had hoped that Starwood would see the error of their ways in wanting to develop this particular area. But that did not seem to be, we didn't seem to be getting through to them. So in October, we amended our petition to allege the existence of anthrax on the woods course. Within about a week to 10 days, Starwood's attorney removed it to federal court on Oahu, stating that it was a potential Superfund site and that only the federal court had jurisdiction over it. The magistrate who heard the argument said, well, we had not pled that it was a Superfund site. They raised that before the court, that this was something that only a federal agency could overlook. But the federal magistrate said they have not pled a federal claim. It can be handled in the state court, and they sent it back to Judge Watanabe and last February.
You had not claimed a federal claim. Okay.
Correct. We had not alleged a federal claim based on, you know, EPA status or anything like that.
Okay.
So the magistrate asked the defense counsel if they had filed an answer in the case, and he said, yes, we have. He said, and you denied the existence of anthrax, correct? Yes, sir. And now you're telling me this is a Superfund site? You can't have this both ways.
First, there's nothing here to see, folks.
Nothing to see here.
And then now it's a Superfund site. Yeah.
Yeah. That is not a fully correct quote, but that was the gist of it.
Yeah. Well, and the fact about a Superfund site is that it does require a little bit more information and evidence than just somebody asking for it, because we tried to ask for it a couple times in Hanalei, and the investigation is quite thorough, and they were pretty good at saying no, it's not, because they really don't want to, you know, spend that kind of time, energy, and money on a site that they think they can handle. Yes, it is a long list, and many of the gasoline stations on the continent are Superfund sites, you know, so they're there's a lot of them around, and it was, you know, I'm not even sure what's in that fund of the Superfund at this point. But it's a process that it certainly would have shut them down for a long time. I find it interesting that they would that they would request a Superfund site, because they certainly couldn't have built buildings on a Superfund site. I don't know what they were thinking. They just wanted to get it into... I don't know what they were thinking. That's an interesting strategy.
I think they wanted to get it off the island of Kauai.
Yeah, well, guess what? It's back.
We're back, exactly. Well, interesting, the EPA has designated several sites that are anthrax contaminated as Superfund sites.
Uh-huh.
But there was, I'm talking about something I'm not quite as well-versed on as I should. Apparently now the EPA has transferred solid waste sites to the states for follow-up. Now, I don't know whether this would still qualify under the EPA, because anthrax is, again, a spore, not a solid waste. So that's still a bit of a fuzzy area in my mind.
Interesting. Well, what I'd like to ask you to do is to keep us informed, and I know you'll keep me informed, but to be willing to come back when the next shoe drops and let us know what's happening and what's next, and as much as you can. Again, I'm sensitive to the fact that it's a moving legal case, and I don't want anything that that I do or say to impact that, except to help the judge make the right decision.
May it be so.
Yes.
I'm also, this is Annie, I'm the engineer of the show. I'm also, because this is sort of a hot topic right now, I'm going to put a copy of this program, an archived recording of this, at kkcr.org. You can look for that within the next week, so that we can share it and maybe talk about it with other people. If someone missed this program, refer them to the archive that they can listen to it and get all that sort of rich and exciting history about North Shore animal husbandry.
Walk through anthrax.
Everything you never wanted to know about anthrax.
Yeah. I know, thank you for that. Yeah, I feel super enriched and itchy now too.
Itchy,
very itchy.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Annie. I really appreciate this. And, Mark, I'll be happy to come back anytime you'll have me.
Oh, you're very, very kind. I hope I know you're where the snow falls. I hope you're not freezing your toes off. But
No, not at all. Okay. I'm all good.
Oh, good, good. Thank you so much. I appreciate your
time. Thank you, Maka'ala.
You take good care.
I appreciate it.
Okay.
Okay, you as well. Aloha.
Aloha. So, for Makai Watch, I just want to remind folks now that we're getting high waves. You know, we've had a series of high waves. Here's the rule. Not that we're rule followers in this community particularly, but when there's a high surf warning, so there's an advisory put out and it says whether it's a watch or a warning. When there's a high surf warning, you are allowed to use your jet ski, otherwise known as a thrill craft, for tow-in purposes, for surfing. The reason is, it's safety. You know, if you get towed in, it saves you the paddle out, of course. But it also means that you've got a jet ski there who's knowledgeable and probably a really good surfer himself, keeping an eye on you and helping you safely out of trouble should you get into it. But if there's not a high surf warning, you can't do it, guys. You can't play in the bay. So the idea is you do it for safety reasons, and that's it. Yes, that bird in the background is my phone. That is the New Ulster Water. So thank you, KKCR, for always being there. Thank you, KKCR, for this opportunity and for the entertainment. They come with a dog. They come with bells and whistles, and they come with Annie. They come with Rodwin. They come with all these wonderful people. And we appreciate them all, and we appreciate Kauai Community Radio. Show your appreciation by donating when you can, supporting whenever you can, because it's a treasure to have your own community radio station be able to have these kinds of conversations. We appreciate you all, and we will see you next month, second Monday of every month. And Wednesday at 7 a.m., you will hear me again, Pilikia Opono, with me and Mauna Kea Trask. And we're talking about booze. Booze, folks. That'll be a fun one. Okay, take good care.
Just
aloha.
As long